impact of the Gwen system.
As with all the challenges presented by what was being called the Citizens Panel, the Air Force countered with the comments of their own panelists. Physiologist and biophysicist Dr. David Irwin from the School of Aerospace Medicine at San Antonio, Texas, stated the case for the Air Force.
There is no national lawful standard, such as the EPA might set, but there are several of these consensus standards. And they're based on these recognized hazards, the ones due to heating, the ones due to shock and burns. The Gwen system is below anybody's standard. Whether it's the American National Standards Institute, the Air Force standards, even the proposed guidelines that the EPA published in 1986.
However, Dr. Irwin's claims of the system's safety were again disputed by Dr. Cleary, who said that the Air Force was applying standards that were outdated by recent research on the effects of electromagnetic fields. Not only short-duration effects of shock or burn should be considered, he said, but also recent epidemiological studies associating exposure to frequencies both higher and lower than those to be emitted by Gwen with cancer and leukemia. Perhaps most surprising to the Air Force panel was that residents would presume to challenge the strategic necessity of Gwen. Their argument was supported by retired Navy Captain James Bush, a member of the Center for Defense Information in Washington.
And what we think of the Center for Defense Information is that the Soviets look at Gwen and they say that this is a program that's designed to fight a nuclear war. That what the United States is doing is preparing to fight a nuclear war. They've got a system to fight a nuclear war. Well, is that going to deter the Soviets? We think that that's much more likely to cause them to attack.
It became clear during the second meeting that residents continue to overwhelmingly reject the idea of having the Gwen facility in their community. And they vowed to continue to fight it despite predictions that halting the congressionally approved project might be next to impossible. However, following that meeting, reports have circulated that Democrat Payne will request a congressional hearing on the project. There are also indications that at the state capitol, questions are being raised similar to those posed by citizens concerning the health and environmental impact of the project. Virginia's Secretary of Natural Resources, John Daniels, and officials of the state's Environmental Council indicated in an exclusive interview that the state should resist the construction of Gwen here unless those concerns are more conclusively addressed by the Air Force. However, despite the positions of these state officials, there is some question whether Virginia will be able to flex any muscle during a time of political transition in Richmond. Outgoing Governor Gerald Blyle, who leaves office in January, has indicated that he is only peripherally aware of the project. And according to campaign manager Laura Dillard, Governor-elect Doug Wilder has yet to consider the issue. Currently, the Air Force is accepting citizen comments as it carries on assessments to determine which of the several potential sites it will choose in Nelson County. After that assessment period, which will be completed in March, a more formal 60-day period of comment will begin, after which the Air Force says they will themselves determine whether further environmental review is warranted, an event that is seen as highly unlikely by observers. Air Force plans currently call for the completion of the Nelson County site, one of two in Virginia, within the year. For Pacifica, this is Mark Haskins reporting from Nelson County, Virginia.
Friday, December, and that's the Pacifica Report for Friday, December 22nd, 1989. Sitting in for Tara Seiler, I'm Mark Beavis, Pacifica News, Washington.
Pacifica News is underwritten by a grant from the Graduate Student Organization. This edition will be rebroadcast tomorrow morning at 6:30 here on WUSB Stony Brook.
And this is WUSB in Stony Brook. We are continuing our coverage of the Panama situation, and we'd like to hear listener phone calls at this point. We're probably going to be going back to WBAI as they recap what's going on and have some more late-breaking news. You might want to turn on your TV sets, because I know the major networks are over at WBAI right now because of the things that they are saying, and consequently the things that we are rebroadcasting here in WUSB. Our number is 632-6901. We'd like to hear, I guess, generally what people think of this whole thing. There hasn't really been a program on the air yet. I don't think, where we've taken calls. And we would like to hear that. While the news was on, we did get several phone calls. And I would say it seems to be split about half and half. Some people say, yeah, it's, you know, what we're doing in Panama is right. What we're doing in Panama isn't right. Seems to be kind of a 50-50 split. Chris is here. Chris usually is here this time of night doing the African beat.
How you doing?
Okay. Well, if there is an African beat, it's going to be kind of a few beats less this night, if there is one at all.
Well, we may just forego the African beat, because this seems to be something that's a bit more important than just playing African music over the course of half an hour, I believe.
Yeah, it's something that, you know, I found out about this just when it was happening, actually, at about 1 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday night, and it really was a surprise. I mean, when you think about it, something like this really shouldn't be a surprise, I suppose, but it was a surprise, you know. We're invading Panama, we're invading another country, and it's just very disturbing that this kind of thing is going on. I mean, we're going in there to find one man.
That's
what we're told, anyway. You know, we're going in there to get Manuel Noriega. So we send 24,000 people in there to get him. And we don't get him. I heard on CBS radio today that the United States has no idea where Noriega is.
How big is Panama, anyhow?
Well, how big are the brains of the people that put this together, if that's what their intention was? They sent 24,000 people in there to get somebody, and they don't do it.
When was the bounty put up for his head? Do you know that, Eric? I don't know.
I believe that happened yesterday. Yes, there is a $1 million bounty on Noriega's head, which, in my opinion, just adds to the absurdity of the whole situation, first of all, okay, there's a Noriega hotline. If folks want to call up and report seeing Noriega somewhere, they can call 202-633-1000. And
Do you think they'll believe that we saw him over in the Union, right?
Well, they say there's a confusing array of tips, rumors, and suspicions phoned into American officials in Washington and in Panama City by Panamanians eager to collect the $1 million bounty offered by the White House for information leading to Noriega's capture. A lot of them are turning out to be very bogus, according to spokespeople there.
The confusion must run rampant down there right now, them trying to follow up all of these leads.
Yeah. I don't know.
They certainly added quite a bit into the fire now.
Do you think the reason for this was simply to get Noriega? I mean, I don't think so. I'll go right now saying I don't think that's true at all. I think it was, I don't know what the actual reason for it was, but...
When is the Panama Canal scheduled to reopen? Did that have something to do with it? I briefly heard that recently.
Well, when are we scheduled to reopen? I don't know if it has been reopened yet.
Yeah, I don't think it has reopened yet, but I heard that, I think it was yesterday, they were saying that Noriega was looking to hop right down there and take it over himself. I'm just wondering if that might be one of the integral parts or one of the reasons why we decided to jump right in on that.
Uh-huh. Well, again, the one of our rationales supposedly was the Panama Canal Treaty was in danger, and so to protect that, we raced down there, and what did we do? We closed it.
Yeah.
We closed the Panama Canal to everybody.
To protect it, right?
To protect it from being closed by somebody. And...
It's a little like your local department or redundancy department.
It's a bit absurd, yes. Mm-hmm. Another thing that bothers me was hearing that Noriega was going to attack Americans. We got this anonymous tip that Noriega was about to plan some kind of action against Americans. So what do? We send at least 21 Americans to their deaths to prevent this. Mm-hmm. And then who knows how many Panamanians have been killed? We've been listening to WBAI reporting saying that the casualty figure is many thousands, and it's just very disturbing. I'm hearing reports now, and this is from mainstream media, which I'll have something to say about in a few minutes, saying that our forces could be in there for up to a year, at least a year, actually.
That's the most disturbing part that I feel, because if this action was to be executed the way that that I'm sure our military had planned it out, it was supposed to be very quick and neat and just get in, get him, and get out, I suppose, if that was the objective. And it looks right now like we've got a lot of egg on our faces, because even the Soviets are beginning to condemn us, or they did yesterday.
The Soviets were one of the first ones to condemn us, I think rightfully so, but they haven't been very harsh about it.
Well, I'm glad to see that, or to hear that, mostly because of the trend, and I guess internationally right now, the flavor of the way things are going.
It sure doesn't make things very easy. To have certain things going on in Eastern Europe, and then for us to just go about with our old ways of just invading, instead of letting things resolve themselves. I mean, look at what just happened today in Romania. Nicolae Ceaușescu was driven out of the country. Actually, I believe he was captured. He and his wife were captured.
Oh, they did do that.
His government was toppled today. Yeah. But his government wasn't toppled by the Soviet Union marching in, which they very well could have, and they would have been just as justified in doing that as we were in marching into Panama. But it didn't happen that way. The people of Romania had enough, and they toppled the government. Yes, a lot of people got killed, but I've got news for you, a lot of people are being killed right now down in Panama, and the blood is on our hands. And that's not the way it should be, because, Panama is not a state. Panama is a different country. Panamanians have to drive Noriega out. And if Panamanians don't drive Noriega out, then Panamanians don't want Noriega out. And we have to live with that fact.
Yeah, this is true. What are we looking at right now?
Well, we're looking at an empty switchboard, for one thing. I'd like to see if anyone out there cares enough to phone in about this. 632-6901. We are going to go back to BAI, but...
give us a call. Let us know your views. What do you feel on this?
Yeah, a lot of people have been watching the major networks. I've been watching some of the major networks, but not all the time. And it's disturbing the way that things are presented. There's like a subtle kind of manipulation there. You turn on the radio and you hear the results of an unscientific poll saying that that 91% of the Americans support this action, and it's unscientific. I believe it was Cable News Network had this poll at about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning after the invasion. And they put up a 900 number of all things, say, hey, call up this 900 number and give us your opinions, and based on that, 91% of the people said they supported it. Now, it's an unscientific poll. It's a very inaccurate poll, but everybody was pointing to it. And as people were waking up all across the country, they were hearing that 91% of the people supported what happened in Panama.
How many people, though? 10 people?
Who knows?
91% of 5 people?
And what kind of representation? I mean, how many poor people get cable TV? How many poor people can call a 900 number? How many people overall? It's
unfortunate what the media can do, and people have to be aware of that.
It's more unfortunate what the media is not doing, and I people do complain about the coverage that we have here sometimes from Pacifica News. They say it's one-sided, but I don't know if that's necessarily true, because all coverage is one-sided to a degree. You just have to be able to see where it's one-sided.
Keep your eyes open. Develop your own opinions.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Is there anybody? Are we on the air?
I think we're on the air. Are we out there?
632-6901. Please give us a call if anyone out there has a thought on this. It's kind of crazy not to care.
Is everyone out there doing the happy hour scene?
It's also very dangerous because,
Yeah, people have to wake up. Are we as apathetic as what's going on down there right now as far as the Panamanians go?
Well, apathy is what things like this are made out of. If no one cares enough to say something, if something is wrong, or even if something is right, nothing can ever possibly be changed.
That's right.
Apathy in Eastern Europe is what allowed things to get to the stage that they were.
Yes.
People not caring enough to stop something. And looks like we have a call. Good evening.
Your phone.
Good evening. Hello.
I thought they asked for responders to the program.
Yes, go ahead.
I think it's pretty foolish our going into Panama. And I think, you know, the United States is going to come out on the wrong side of foreign policy again.
Uh-huh. When did you first find out about this?
The morning, Wednesday morning on the radio.
And how did it strike you when you first heard it?
Well, it seems like there we go again, trying to act like we still had the right to go down with gunboat diplomacy, and we don't seem to have any sense of how the world, it was never morally right, but now it's also politically not right. Look at Peru now, they say they're not going to support the resistance to the work with the United States on the drug resistance, and not that that isn't have a lot of problems with it in itself, but it's just the wrong thing to do at the wrong time. And the American public doesn't mind if we go in and we go out in a two-day kind of a thing, but then it doesn't like it when it hangs on.
It seemed to me very predictable that this would turn into a longer kind of a thing. I mean, how long have we been in there now? 3 days? It's going to last a very long time.
Exactly, because we underestimate the ability of resistance, just like we do in El Salvador, just like we do down in Nicaragua.
That's true. How long have those little battles been going on? They're not little battles. They're ugly things, and we just keep getting deeper and deeper into them.
Also, you know, if we look at the reaction of people other than Britain, which is, you know, kind of always on our side, and the moderated response of Canada, the rest of the world doesn't think very much of it.
No, that's certainly true. And, you know, who really cares what England has to say about something going on in Central America? It doesn't really affect them.
Well, I'll tell you why I think we went down.
Why?
Butch does, Butch, President Bush,
Freudian slip there.
Otherwise known as Butch, doesn't like to be thought of as a wimp.
He's just going to be thought of as an idiot now. But I do think he's trying to prove something. It's like this one-upmanship he has with Noriega. You know, he's got to like have the upper hand. And right now, you know, I would say Noriega has got the upper hand, and George Bush has given it to him on a silver platter.
It's the same thing with some of the Arab nations. They're laughing up their sleeves sometimes because we pull it off poorly. But that's not the real question. The real question is a moral question, but that's never interested us very much. But,
yeah.
You know, people respond more to the fact that we might blunder than to the fact that it might be immoral.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because most people, you know, you ask most people, do you think the United States...
Most people are thinking. Well, I mean, in terms of what's going on with our foreign policy, most people aren't thinking about it.
Well, because they entrust it into the hands of other people. They don't really want to be bothered with it, and that's a big mistake. But we're certainly capable of thinking of it. But most people seem to think that, yes, we're up to something. Yes, there is, you know, drug laundering going on with the Contras. You know, yes, we're not always in the right. That's something that... that reveals a lot more than a poll does. If you ask somebody a pointed question in a poll, you know, do you support it, yes or no, most people would probably say yes, because to say no is a bit more of a commitment.
Mm-hmm.
To say, you know, yes or no with an explanation and then take that explanation into account, that's when you have a real opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And just answering something with a one-word reply is really not... not answering the question, and
right.
I think that's what the pollsters should be trying to do if we want to try to take polls at all. But the thing is, you know, this is such a subtle form of manipulation of the way that you think, because you turn on the radio and you hear the way people think. Now, if you're a mainstream person, as a lot of us are, we don't want to make too many waves in our lives. We want to just, you know, live our lives out and be left alone. We're not going to stand up on a street corner and say, hey, the whole world is wrong, and, you know, I believe this. We're going to say, well, you know, I trust these people. If they think it's right, then it's right.
Well, also, you know, you're mentioning the news coverage. It's so pro-American in its information input. I mean, we don't get a lot of the opinions of the other countries. It's not emphasized. You know, we don't get the perspective of how America looks from other than American eyes.
Well, you know,
so there's another interesting part to the situation. With the Iran-Contra gate, there seems to be a lot of, I can't say evidence, I guess, if it hasn't been proved yet, but there's a lot of Well, I guess I can say evidence to suggest that George Bush was very knowledgeable about the fact that we were allowing drug smugglers to come back. And Noriega may even have been involved, and he may have condoned some of Noriega's behavior. And the way the suits against North and there was another trial that was really squashed against private citizens who've been involved in the Iran-Contra affair, you know, indicate that Bush was very knowledgeable and supportive of allowing drugs to come into the country.
Mm-hmm.
So
this thing, I'm convinced, is not about drugs. I mean, it's not about drugs. If it was about drugs, why aren't we invading Colombia?
Mm-hmm.
Why did we allow the Contras to channel drugs?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
It goes a lot deeper than that. We're using Noriega as an example. We're saying this guy, I mean, I don't know if you heard what we had on before, where they broke into Noriega's home and they said, oh, look at this, he had pornographic magazines, he had a picture of Hitler. And we're trying to paint the picture of him so that everybody will say, boy, this guy is terrible, we've got to get him at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than just one man here. We want power. We want
the
country.
We're still operating with a macho mentality, and to be a wimp is to be worse than to be immoral, really,
mm-hmm.
to appear to be a wimp.
So what do you think people can do? What do you think individual people...
Oh, think. I mean, really start to begin to question, to get other sources of news in the television, and to talk about it. People don't talk... I'm a professional person. Nobody where I hang out talks about... what's going on politically, not in any kind of questioning way.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think Europeans are much, much more aware of, much more critical of what's going on, in their world. So this kind of a, like, John Wayne mentality that's, you know, so inappropriate to the era that we're living in, as I see it.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for your call.
Yes, and, didn't want you hanging out there all by yourself.
Yeah, well, I hope some more people call in.
I'm going to give a guess what's going to happen, though. I think we're going to be down there for a long time. I think Noriega is going to be very successful at eluding us. I think we're going to further annoy the Latin American countries, and I think it's going to turn around and not work for Bush at all.
What do you think is going to become of Noriega?
Going to rule from hiding.
Do you think he'll ever be brought to the United States for trial?
I don't think we really want him. I think he knows things about Bush and some of the involvement of earlier people, Reagan and the like, the winking at his involvement in drugs.
You know, everybody says that.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody says he will never go to trial because he knows too much.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not reflected in these polls that I see. That's not one of the questions that's asked. Does he know something about Bush, about the government? And I think that that we'll find he'll either disappear and never be heard from again, or he'll be found dead. But we won't actually have shot him.
Well, he should do
that. Will
slip
look bad.
Away to another country and have a press interview, you know, and reveal what he knows.
Uh huh.
Make it more interesting.
Well, I think we have the closest thing to that now by doing our simulcast WBAI, because we did just get a tape from Noriega.
Oh, did you? I tuned in about 15 minutes ago.
Right. Well, we're going to be going back to BAI coverage, and hopefully we'll get that tape again. But yes, there was a communique issued by him, pretty much saying that that the sole responsibility of this is on George Bush's shoulders. And it's something we're going to be continuing to cover throughout the night and throughout the coming days. Hopefully not too many days, but you know, even if we pull out tomorrow, look at what's happened. Look at what we've done. We're talking casualties now, and I don't know why. I don't know why the mainstream press is not saying anything about this. And I hate to have to say the mainstream press. It makes me seem like a
but it's accurate.
Like one of these,
it's right.
Like
using the word patriarchy,
you know,
you become embarrassed to use it, but there's no other word that's quite as good.
Right now, you know, you have every right to call NBC, ABC, CBS, even PBS if necessary. I've heard some very critical things about NPR's coverage. and say, you know, this coverage is not representative of what is happening. You're focusing on the wrong things. For instance, I'll give you a very good example. It was I don't know which major network it was. I think it was CNN actually had a graphic up the day after the invasion, saying, and they kept it up for quite a while, saying U.S. Hostages taken, or U.S. It was either U.S. hostages taken or Americans killed.
And how about
like,
the yeah,
no kidding, no kidding. You invade a country. What the hell do you expect to happen? You know, people are going to get killed, and people are going to be taken hostage. And believe it or not, those 14 people taken hostage at the Marriott Hotel Tuesday night were not the biggest thing. I didn't care as much about them as I cared about the people in the neighborhoods who were being firebombed. And what happened two nights ago was a colleague of mine, Robert Knight at WBAI, had a friend of his, someone he had talked to quite a lot in Panama City, a radio broadcaster. He had interviewed him, and then he had just learned that almost immediately after he had interviewed him, the building that he was in was firebombed. And he very likely could have lost his friend there. The reason, and this is what really gets me, the reason for this firebombing was because the radio station that this person worked at had broadcast a speech by Manuel Noriega. Mm. We, Democratic United States, heard something on the radio we did not like, and we went, and we destroyed the radio station and everyone in it. And I just cannot believe this is really happening.
Can I recommend one thing?
Sure.
Have you ever heard of the Christic Institute?
Yes, in fact, I was listening to WOR radio, and they had Father, what's his name, from the Christic Institute. I forget what his name was, but he was very good.
They are so informative.
They are very informative.
Way before Contragate broke, it was a year before, I had this whole news, nicely printed, maybe 8-page thing on Hull and the whole group that has been involved in working, killing people
Ma'am, I don't mean to interrupt you, but we do have to go to the Noriega tape. I believe it's
been
broadcast.
Hey, great talking with you.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
We're going back to WBAI now. Actually, maybe we're not going just right back to BAI now, but we will be in a second. Mort McCloskey is here. Hi, Mort.
Hi, am I on?
Yes, you're on now.
Mort,
running into the studio, and we will be taking phone calls, 632-6901. We do want to get more people to call up and comment on what's going on. Mort, what are your feelings on all this?
Well, when I first heard about it... Oh, wait, is something coming on over the air now?
Not yet, but there will be.
I hear it. I hear something coming on. Okay, now the first thing I heard about that I thought something was very peculiar with was they said, Noriega declared war on the United States. That's a distortion. He didn't declare war on the United States. What he did do was say that a state of war existed. That's somewhat different. And the United States proved that he was correct. A state of war does exist, and the United States proved it by invading. Secondly, another lie or a distortion is that we want to bring democracy to Panama. Well, the same reason we wanted to bring democracy to Guatemala in 1954 when we overthrew the democratically elected government in Guatemala. I guess the same way we wanted to bring democracy to Chile in 1973 when we overthrew the democratically elected government of Salvador Allende in Chile. The same way we want to bring democracy to Panama is we brought it to Guatemala, to El Salvador, to Honduras, where we are backing, rather than democracies, I would guess you can call them totalitarian fascist dictatorships that have no qualms about not only murdering their people, but mutilating and torturing them. That's the kind of democracy we have a history of bringing to Latin America. And Latin America knows this. It appears the only people who don't know this are the people in the United States who really want to believe that we're good. This is my sense of things. Okay.
Let's take a call. We'll go back to the BAI coverage. 632-6901 is our telephone number. Please let us know what you think about this. This is probably the most important issue that's come up in years concerning us directly. And I can't stress that enough. It does concern us directly. It could be people that we know, our neighbors, going down there to to fight and perhaps to die. At least 21 of them have already been killed in this, I hate to say the phrase again, but senseless war, which appears to be 21 so far.
How many Panamanians have been
Panamanians, they say the casualty counts. This is according to someone, a UN meeting today, and I don't have their exact name, but we will be hearing more about that. About 7,000 casualties. That includes wounded.
Yeah, and this is after Bush is telling us that one life is meaningful. One life. Yeah, right.
He's got a lot of meaning to explain. 632-6901. Good evening.
Well,
go ahead.
I was just calling in. It's amazing. I think when we have the strongest force in the world, you get the itchy finger to use it.
We've seemed to have been looking for a war for quite a while. Maybe we found one.
It's amazing the contradictions in light of the world situation. Here, George Bush is playing a subdued role in Europe, saying how he's peacefully forced democracy through strength, and here we go, by using force, trying to bring democracy to Panama. So the contradictions are amazing, you know. I guess the Bush presidency isn't too far afield from the Reagan presidency in that regard.
Well, you know, I think if Reagan had done this, there'd somehow be a lot more criticism. And that scares me, the fact that Bush can get away with this kind of thing much easier than Reagan. He seems more in control, and that's what really frightens me.
Right. it seems since Bush didn't come in with the image that Reagan had come in with, he can get away with a little more. I don't think...
Well, I mean, there's only one way to find out, and it's to ask him directly and have him tell all. Let's have full disclosure here, you know?
Right. I guess it's amazing, you know, the public reaction is sort of indifferent from what I can feel on the streets.
Why do you suppose that is?
I think it's this type of aggression is becoming accepted. I think through the this type of not limited action, but this type of war is becoming standard fare of American politics. I think we expect it. I think the 80s were a decade where we intervened in a number of situations like this, and it's nothing new. A best friend of mine in law school was so passe about it, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't even... It's pretty sad. I mean, so far, what, 19 American lives?
21.
21 American lives. So.
And it's bound to go higher. There is, of course, censorship on the military pool of reporters. You know, everything has to be cleared by the military before it reaches our ears. You know, that I guess in itself is understandable when you're dealing with a war. But the fact is that's not being mentioned. That's not understandable. It's, you know, in a way, I sense a kind of apologetic air about the press. Remember Grenada? Grenada, the press, you know, ran in there and asked questions, which I believe is what they're supposed to be doing. But they got roundly chastised for that, and now they're being extra careful not to do that. And that's, what's the point? Why not just listen to the White House press service and keep Peter Jennings at home?
Right. In Grenada, they took a lot of heat for that. I think it might have been traumatic for them, even. Maybe they formed a little bit too much public opinion in that regard. I mean, but that's their job, to form public opinion. Not
exactly. And that's, you know, when people criticize Pacifica for taking a stand on something, I think they're missing the point of what press is. Press isn't there to be completely neutral. No press is.
Right. Impossible to approach any subject without bias.
Right. Right. It's impossible, and I think Pacifica tries to to cover all bases. Obviously, they're trying to provide an alternative at the same time by talking to the people that aren't talked to on the mainstream media, and by approaching things from a different point of view, and just not assuming that what they're told is right. And I think that's what we all should be doing, is not assuming that what anyone says is right, finding out for ourselves.
Right, that's the building block of any democracy. I feel like the press coverage so far has been very reserved. It has been,
and that's why I think it's very important for us to call and say, listen, guys, get your act together. because obviously something horrible is going on here. I haven't actually seen. Have you seen much TV coverage?
I have. I've watched a bit of Channel 7.
What does it look like? What do the cities look like? The destruction.
I haven't seen a lot of pictures. I haven't seen much pictures. What I've gotten mostly is General Powell and the members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff talking about the subject, interviews, basically. I think the military was, more than happy to go in there and do their job, from what I gather. I don't sense there's a lot of questioning there. I sense they feel they've established a victory, and they're very, self-satisfied with that. But, I mean, people are dying, I mean, that's the, Americans are dying.
Americans and Panamanians, yes. It's not being focused upon enough. I haven't really heard any casualty figures on the radio, on the TV.
Right. I mean, this is a battle. I think one of the big points of this is, I think you mentioned it earlier, what's the focus going to be now that we've thrown him out of power? I mean, what's the focus? What's the point of this now? To go hunt some fugitives, risk American lives, spend millions of dollars to... throw some beyond. I mean, there is still resistance, but I really don't see the point now. Is this just a way to keep occupying? I mean, this is going to go on. This is going to keep going on. We're going to, occupy.
It doesn't make me very thrilled at where I'm sitting right now. Thanks for calling, sir. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Bayshore.
Bayshore, okay. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll have some more stuff coming up.
Okay, thank you.
632-6901, if anyone else wants to call in. We'll be going back to Pacifica coverage in a moment. Mort?
Yeah, I don't completely agree. I don't think the people will tolerate this as they would have maybe with a Reagan. Reagan had the Hollywood charisma type thing, but Bush doesn't. If this thing lasts much longer and the body count of our troops keep, increasing and they don't get out, there's going to be, public doesn't want this. See, Reagan, when the troops got killed in Lebanon, got out of that by invading Grenada. So, that took our mind off that. What's Bush going to do to take our mind off Panama? What's he going to do, invade? Maybe he'll invade Nicaragua. One of the benefits of this for the administration is nobody's talking about what's going on in Salvador anymore. But I think maybe the bottom line on all of this was exhibited by what he did with regard to China. It's obvious what the bottom line in China was. It was economics. It had nothing to do with democracy. The Chinese... are still brutalizing their people, and there's no change in that. So the bottom line in our foreign policy has nothing to do with democracy. It's economics. And if anyone tells us that they don't go along with us, we'll take them out. And this is my sense of the whole picture.
Good evening.
Hi, how are you doing tonight?
Okay.
I'm just sitting here listening to this, and a couple of things strike me that I'd like to comment on. One of them is the gentleman that you have commenting with you. I didn't get his name because I just tuned in a few minutes ago.
Okay, that's Mort McCloskey.
Okay. This is almost like a jury trial, the way this is being commented on, whereas the prosecution, on one hand, tries to paint the defendant as all bad, and the defense tries to paint the defendant as all good. This thing lies somewhere in the middle. And... there's a lot of bad things about Bush, no question about it. There's a lot of bad things about Noriega. A lot of bad things about some governments. No comment has been made with regard to the servicemen that were killed prior to the attack. Some comments have been made with regard to journalism on your program, and I'd like somebody to comment on. Journalism should be completely neutral unless it's labeled advocacy journalism or an editorial. All I want to know is what happened, not the reporter's opinion or the paper's opinion or the station's opinion. Care to comment on that?
Well, it's a lot more subtle than that. You see, you can present the facts, but how do you present the facts? Do you say, well, this happened, you know, apparently because this, I mean, who do you get comments from? You know,
for example, in China. Yeah, I mean, a comment was made about China. Now, what's happening in China represents less than 1% of the population in China. Now, nobody's reporting on the misery that the rest of the Chinese people are going through. Just like Ethiopia. I don't mean to jump around, but that was a big deal because some rock band made a record about it. The people are still miserable in Ethiopia. Nobody is commenting on it, and the situation hasn't changed.
And, you know, the reason for that is because commenting on miserable people doesn't really sell papers. And, you know, it's...
Like the press jumps on the bandwagon of whatever happens to be hot at the moment and then jumps off it. Hasn't changed anybody's mind, hasn't improved a thing. And the reporting that we're getting on anything from, like, a woman called in before and mentioned something about Contra Gates, nice trendy term, but it doesn't really imply or show kind of what took place there, because I don't think anybody still knows what really took place there. The news media certainly didn't find out. Would you agree with that or disagree with that?
I don't. Certainly. And I think, you know, the news media could have done
and they just
done
dropped
more.
It.
They just dropped it because it reached the point where, you know, there wasn't anything else they could say that was sensationalist. But they, you know, it's a lot of hard work finding out what really happened. And you have to think about it a bit. You can't always just report the facts. You have to elaborate a bit and say, well, this is what this could mean, because the average person won't see the connection. So it's, you know, it's up to a journalist to point these things out. So of course there's going to be some bias depending on the, you know, the way his outlook on something.
Yeah, but see that I think, not to tie up too much of your time, but I think that therein lies a large part of the problem. There is very little substance going on with regard to journalism now. Jump in, smack the whatever happens to be the subject of the moment, and jump out. Now, there's no reason when a plane crashes, for example, for a news station to devote its entire evening to that. The plane crashed, unfortunately, life was lost, and now every time a plane crashes, is it a terrorist, or they blow it up, so on and so forth. All we read about, all we hear about is this thing in Panama. I certainly don't believe that whatever I'm reading or hearing is the full story on what took place. I mean, you know, as an American, I think it's a little bit embarrassing at this point that we haven't got Noriega yet, you know.
Obviously, if that is the reason why we went in there to get Noriega, it seems like we should have at least known where he was.
I would think so. I would certainly think so. You know, and that says a lot about this country, our so-called great CIA. I would think that, you know, a lot of people died for nothing here. I think that something had to be done about Noriega, but we sure as hell should have known where he was before we went in there.
Now, you see, one thing you said there, though, you said you read newspapers, watch TV, and you don't believe everything that you're fed.
No, I don't believe that I'm getting the full story. I think I'm getting very little of what's really going on.
Okay, now do you think most people feel the same way? Or?
No, I don't. No, I don't believe that at all. And I'm not saying I'm better than anybody. I'm just saying that I really question.
Right, well, therein lies the problem, the fact that most people do believe what they see on TV. And what they see on TV tends to be a very bland way of looking at the whole world. First of all, we see a very limited view of the world. Like you said, certain things are not mentioned at all. And that adds to our misperception of the United States, our involvement, what we do, how it affects everything. So, you know, we might not see the invasion of Panama as something all that major, just a bit of fun maybe for the holidays.
Well, I think the one thing, yeah, I don't know about how the holidays play into that, but I'll just make one final comment, and that is that I really believe this, that most Americans don't really take all this stuff that seriously, and I think that, unfortunately, we've had it too good too long, you know, in spite of the fact that we have inflation, we have this, we have that, we have all these different problems. We don't have the problems that the rest of these countries have, and we just can't really relate to some of the difficulty that they do have. And,
okay.
You know, my in the last few days since we've attacked Panama, you know, I've heard a lot of the Yahoo, you know, go George, do it to him, we should blow him off the face of the earth and everything else. But the average guy living in Panama doesn't need this. You know what I mean? The average family down there, they sure as hell don't need this.
How about the average person living in any country in the world? What do they think?
That's
you know, that's the world, you know, not just here. There's so much more to it.
All right, that's the only comments I wanted to make. You enjoy the show and keep it up.
Okay, where are you calling from, sir?
Kings Park.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Any comments?
Yeah, I'd like to respond to some of that. I'm not at this moment. I'm not a reporter, You know, maybe if I were in Panama, I could be commenting on what's taking place.
Okay, we're going to go back to BAI, so your comments, then we'll go back to the BAI coverage.
Okay, I'm more commenting on what's taking place, and one of the reasons I'm commenting on it is when I read or watch the establishment press, I'm getting one side of this thing. However, there is an alternate side that is out there in the press, but it's the non-establishment press. If you want information about what happened with Contras and drugs and the rest of that, it's there, but you got to look for it a little. If you read stuff like The Nation or The Progressive or In These Times or Mother Jones or even The New Yorker, you're going to get stuff that the establishment press, I'm certain, is deliberately keeping off the air. Now, in addition, if any of these plane crashes or something that you're complaining about hit page one, I think they should be looked into if they are consequences of U.S. policy. And I think that's what the Lockerbie downing was. It was a consequence of our taking out that Iranian jetliner back in the prior summer. So it's important that we pay close attention to. I think everything's related out there. And in no way do I think that... That the death of any U.S. soldier, that one that was killed prior to the invasion, is something that one should ignore. However, I think these things are consequences, again, of the belligerent United States policy. As far as I had heard, and I don't think even the establishment press has denied that, Noriega was a creation of U.S. and with the CIA. And it's quite possible that they decided to dump him when they found that he was playing both sides. And in terms of a lot of the stuff that has been taking place, I feel strongly about the present administration. My feeling is that Bush and Reagan both should have been brought to impeachment on what could have been brought out in the Iran-Contra hearings but was kept from the American public, and my sense of that is they didn't think that the American public would tolerate another impeachment, but I think there were grounds for impeachment, and I believe they were kept from the public. And the consequence of not going to impeachment is we're left with a fellow who I think is quite shallow. And does move the troops when he feels he maybe has to show some macho because of the criticism he got 3 weeks ago, where they almost handed him over to him and he didn't know how to take the gift. So now a lot more blood is being spilled, and I don't think the public here is going to tolerate this. This is their kid's blood, so they're not going to give him the deal that maybe they would have given a Reagan. Okay, this is my response to some of the comments that just preceded what I had to say. Okay? Okay. Yeah.
Well, things are quite hectic. We're going to rejoin WBAI now in New York with their coverage, and we'd like to hear your opinions. You can call us off-air, 632-6901, or you can call WBAI and be a part of their discussion as well. We now join WBAI. This is WUSB Stony Brook.
Establishment that has everybody hoodwinked, and also I have been into, for the last 5 or 6 years, into spirituality, not anything, you know, hocus-pocus or hokey, but, you know, a real basic spirituality that comes from the basis of all religions. And, you know, I'm not going to bore you or anything, but, you know, one thing in the Bible does say that the gate is wide and many there enter into destruction. And I think that's exactly what's happened with our American society. Well, the response, the favoritism that the people have given to this thing that Bush has done is just terrible. And I think it's just absolutely unconscionable that they should, you know, give favor to this. I mean, people are being killed here at this time of the year, Christmas, and also in this time, like many people have said before, where the walls of both figuratively and literally the walls of socialism and I should say communism are being torn down and coming down by themselves through the will of the people over there. People's hearts are opening up, and then Bush has to go do something like this to destroy it all, to put a black cloud over the whole thing. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do know what you mean, and I have to tell you, caller, that let me make a personal comment here that I really did have a difficult time sleeping last night. I was up, it was 1 o'clock, it was 2 o'clock. I kept hearing details. I kept hearing this extraordinary racism and this imperialist mentality. I'm really not always inclined to use sort of the rhetoric of the movement, but if I ever felt that I was living in a country that was imperialist, the definition of that, I mean, this is it. We are back. It's not even covert. It's like, we're going to go in, we know what we want, and we'll do anything to get it. And there was a great loss when George Bush was talking about the Constitution and democracy. First, he uses the word indicted drug runner as if indicted means convicted. Then he drops indicted, and he says a fugitive drug runner, so we can do whatever we want. Well, he's a fugitive drug runner. We're going to bring him back to justice. Well, Mr. Bush, I want to ask you, what happened to the Constitution? What happened to the idea that we're going to try Noriega in this country under the so-called freedoms? Well, you know, you're innocent until proven guilty. What do you mean, fugitive drug dealer? What happened to the Constitution? I mean, these things just... And the press then jumps on that. All of a sudden, he's a drug dealer. He wasn't even... Not that he wasn't convicted. His indictment didn't have to do with drug dealing, per se. I mean, there's so many things that are thrown into the wind for the sake of U.S. policy that, I mean, I'm tongue-tied at this point, and I'm also very tired because I've been here since 5 o'clock in the morning. But I share your sentiments, listener, and I wish I could be more articulate. We're going to go on to another phone call. I want to ask people to be as brief as possible. We got a full switchboard of calls. We have a lot of other material we want to bring to you, but we do want to give you an opportunity to voice your point of view, your opinion, and we also want to encourage people who were at that demonstration who perhaps saw that encounter, or perhaps you were arrested or intimidated by the police, or maybe you were the man who was under those 30 cops that you just heard this woman talking about. Maybe we can hear from you. Anyway, this is WBAI 279-3400. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
I wanted to know if you had any information on the demonstration that I heard is going to be held in Brooklyn.
I don't know what's going on with that one. Maybe if anybody was at the demo in Brooklyn, please give us a call and let us know. 279-3400. WBAI, you're on the air. That's you. Do you have a quick question or comment?
Yes. Is it Fred Francis, whom Robert shared the airplane with? A reporter by that name was on NBC Network News. I can give you a description of him, whom he represents, what he said.
Is Fred Francis what?
Was he the guy toting surveillance electronic gear who took Robert Knight's seat on the flight from Miami to Panama City he told us about?
I don't know. You'll have to ask Robert that. He's not in here now. I can't.
This could be interesting and important to you. I'll give you my number if I'm off the air, and you can call me back if you want.
Okay. Well, my engineer will take your number off the air, and we will call you back and follow this up. Thank you very much. I want to welcome, while we're here, I want to welcome the listeners of WU. Hold on there. Hold on there. Let's keep that caller on the air, okay, because we have Robert back.
Hello, are you there?
All right. We want to welcome the listeners of WUSB 90.1 FM in Stony Brook.
I'll deal with that off.
Okay. Robert is back. Okay, caller, ask your question to Robert Knight.
Hello, can you hear us? Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I was doing something else. I overheard your comments. Tell me exactly what you were saying.
That NBC Network News had an interview on camera with Fred Francis. I don't know whether that's the name of the guy who took your seat on the flight to Panama City.
Who was Fred Francis in this NBC interview?
He was the pool reporter.
What?
The reporter to all television outlets from the United States who pool their story sources.
Let us talk off the air.
Okay. While you go talk off the air, Robert, will you come back and tell us what this is about?
Yes.
Thank you. You're listening to WBAI Informal Radio in New York City. We want to once again formally welcome the listeners of WUSB, that's 90.1 FM, in Stony Brook. That's 90.1 FM in Stony Brook. And we want to welcome those listeners to call us here at 212-279-3400. We have been joined by this radio station, which is out in Stony Brook, and we're happy to have you aboard, as our admiral from the Center for Defense Information says at times. So you can call us at 212-279-3400 if you can get through. We have a full board. WBAI, you're on the air. Could you please make your comments or question quick? That's you. Okay, let's go on.
AI for all the wonderful coverage.
Uh-huh.
Yesterday, Robert Knight said President Bush should be impeached. Well, I think the American public should be impeached. They're the ones who voted for him. I think they should be disenfranchised for next presidential election. What do you think?
Well, you know what? I'm gonna reserve judgment on that. In fact, I'm not sure I agree with you. In fact, I believe in people. I'm sort of an idealist, and I believe if you give people the real information, the right if you give them a full flood of information and let them choose, they will make decisions that are humane and respectful. And an example of that is, despite the Reagan administration 8 years of pounding for the Contras, they could never get an opinion poll that was in support of the Contras. So my worry is that the information has been withheld from the people. And if you can get to the information, I wouldn't be so quick to impeach the American people. But I would support Robert Knight's declaration for the beginning, at least, of impeachment proceedings against the president of this country. Robert.
Yes. I am a reporter. I have been a reporter for a decade, news director. And as you know, Dennis, now senior producer, Undercurrents. And I just want to say something to clear the public air and to maintain something that I believe in very strongly, the need for a presumption of innocence. So many of the reports and reporters that you hear every day now in television, in the papers, say that a person pleads innocent to a crime. And that breaks down the constitutional structures that we have learned, that a person is presumed not guilty, and that is the plea, not guilty until the state proves the charges that are made. Now, I just want to be very clear, because I do not want the very precise reporting I have made on incidents surrounding my travels to Panama, which, as a reporter, I'm very clear about, very precise about. I have told the story on the air before, that on the way down, Dennis, that my seat was taken by a man whose description I gave, and I have always said, who identified himself as one Colonel Fred Francis. Now, those two names are common. That could have been a true name, or it could have been a fabricated name. I do not know. All I know is the man identified himself by that name. If there is another correspondent who is a legitimate correspondent for any other news or medium or media institution who happens to have that same name, I by no means wish to falsely associate any implications by something which could be true or not true that somebody on an airplane told me. So I just want to be very clear about that I am not seeking to impugn or otherwise cast any aspersions on anyone else in my profession. But I will certainly, investigate any and all information that, that comes to me. But I want to very clearly establish the constitutional and broadcast analogy of the presumption of innocence. I wish for no one else's reputation to be harmed any more than I would my own.
All right, Robert, just a couple of minutes. Stay with us. Let's take just a couple of calls together, okay? WBAI, you're on the air. That's you. Please, quickly, do you have a quick question for Robert Knight or myself, Dennis Bernstein?
Yes, I have a quick question and I'll hang up. On the Noriega tape, he said something about tomorrow the U.S. will violate international law, etc. When was the tape made, and what was the specific U.S. action he was talking about? I wonder if you might like to ponder on what that might have been. Thank you very much. I'll listen to the answer.
I can only speculate. I know what was on the tape. I know from previous conversations that this voice sounds to me the same as the voice I've spoken with On more than one previous occasion. In other words, I am convinced that it is the voice of General Noriega. I do not know when, where, or how that tape was made. I know that the means by which I obtained it is through sources who have in the past been of the utmost reliability and accuracy. The statement in reference to treaties and so on would, as I would understand the words, mean that by this invasion, he did not say these words explicitly, this is my paraphrasing or interpretation of what has been said, that this invasion is a violation of international treaties, and in particular, the Panama Canal treaties, which explicitly forbid the United States to intervene in the internal affairs of Panama, even though you can also find a clause that permits intervention for specifically the defense of the canal. The invasion and the creation of a government fabricated in Washington is considered by Panamanians or Panamanian nationalists to be a violation of the 1977 Panama Canal treaties. The Deconsigne Reservation, Public Law 77, is also considered a violation by creating a position of chief engineer to override the chief administrator. This very week, the end of this very month, the United States was obligated by law to appoint as chief administrator of the canal a Panamanian national of the choosing of the Panamanian government. And at 1 o'clock in the morning on a day in this week, when President Bush sends in a military invasion force and creates a government of his own choosing for the people of Panama, and uses that government perhaps to acquiesce to the nominee and other wishes of the interest of his government, I think that is the sort of thing that perhaps the speaker may have meant by violation of treaties. When the speaker, whom I believe to be General Noriega, said that tomorrow the United States will be violating all of its treaties, what he's saying is, and this is another reason I believe it's authentic, this is an echo and an elaboration of what he said when I interviewed him on Monday, just before the invasion. And he said at that time that the entire world should be worried. It should be occupied, preoccupied with this violation of the Panama Canal treaties, because if a president today can abrogate what a previous president of the United States has signed, then in the future, an American president will abrogate agreements made with the Soviet Union. And so, for this and various other reasons, I'm convinced.
Things happening in Guatemala and how they compare to what's going on in Panama now. So these are some of the things we have upcoming for you. We're going to try, I think, we are trying right now. You can hear in the background, it's a rather gutsy operation here, gritty, but we're here for you, and we're working on the spot every moment to bring you more information. In fact,
you're listening to a simulcast with WBAI Radio. This is WUSB, Stony Brook, New York. Rocking Iration, the Caribbean reggae program, usually on at this time, will be on from 9 to 10 o'clock tonight.
Translated by Alex... I'm sorry, him, Silvio Hernandez. He will join us from Panama, IPS correspondent, and that translation will be done by Alex Villard. So let's begin with that. We're going to Panama to Silvio Hernandez.
Hola, mucho gusto. Hola. ¿Nos escuchas? Hola.
Perfecto,
muy bien. Entonces yo soy el traductor aquí en la estación, entonces el señor Bernstein le quiere hacer una pregunta, por favor.
Question. Thank you, please. I wonder, Silvio Hernandez, I wonder if you could give us the latest report you have in terms of casualties on the ground there in Panama. We have something in terms of U.S. the U.S. military pool, we have
perhaps 60 dead or 100 Panamanians dead, and something like 20 Americans dead. What are your statistics?
Hola, nos gustaría saber la estadística de bajas, más o menos, de muertos y heridos en Panamá, o sea, ciudadanos panameños y también soldados de los Estados Unidos. Los reportes aquí de la prensa de la estadounidense ha sido de 60 a 100 muertos panameños y de 20 soldados norteamericanos. ¿Son correctas estas cifras?
No, varían un poco con las cifras que se han estado manejando aquí en Panamá.
The numbers vary slightly.
Anoche, el Comando Sur informó que tenían 21 muertos.
Last night, the Southern Command said 21 dead.
Y 208 heridos.
And 208 wounded.
No hubieron nuevos informes en el día de hoy.
There was no new information today from Southern Command.
La cifra de muertos entre los panameños extraoficial.
The extraofficial Panamanian death toll is.
Y 290.
¿Puede repetir, por favor?
Entre 280 y 290.
Between 280 to 290 dead.
Esto incluye población civil y fuerzas militares.
This includes civil, basically civilians, and the Panamanian Defense Force dead.
La cantidad de heridos entre los panameños también varía, desde cifras de 500 hasta 1,000.
The wounded have been categorized and counted at 500 to 1,000, various reports. Un segundito, otra pregunta más, por favor.
All right, I want to ask you, Silvio Hernandez, talking to us in Panama, where were you today? Tell us about where you were and what you saw out there in the streets of Panama.
¿En qué barrio estuviste, en qué parte de la ciudad estuviste y qué usted pudo ver hoy en día en la ciudad de Panamá?
Bueno, yo recorrí toda la Vía España.
I went up and down the Vía España. Approximately to which is a very central avenue to the place where the first military encounters took place. The barrio of Carrasquillas in San Francisco.
Río Abajo, Parque Lefebvre, anduve por el área cercana a Panamá la Vieja.
The old city of Panama and.
Lo que vi en el día ha sido un gran caos y anarquía, sobre todo en horas de la mañana y del mediodía.
There has been much chaos and anarchy I've witnessed, especially during the day and during the evening.
Estaba a las calles, unos con la intención de buscar comercios para comprar alimentos y otros con la intención de continuar saqueando lo poco que queda en los centros comerciales y los comercios, casas de ventas de automóviles y todo lo que se pueda robar.
Basically, there were two categories of people that Mr. Hernandez could identify. Basically, people going out looking for food, scavenging for food, and the looting, taking away what few things still remain, even looting in car dealerships. Continúa.
Yo no presencié directamente combates hoy, pero fui informado por colegas que en el Palacio Legislativo, donde funciona el nuevo gobierno de Guillermo Endara, se produjo un ataque.
I didn't.
De Alex a Noriega.
Okay, un segundito. I didn't personally see any active combat, but journalistic colleagues have pointed out that there was an attack. They witnessed an attack on the legislative palace, which is where the new government of Endara, the American-appointed supposed leader of Panama, is, and it was the attack was staged by Noriega loyalist. Sigue, por favor.
Estos atacantes fueron enfrentados por soldados norteamericanos y quedaron en el lugar dos muertos y dos heridos.
The attackers were repulsed by American troops, and there were two dead and two wounded by the attack. Sigue, por favor.
Bien fui informado por el vocero del presidente Endara, el periodista Anel Vélez.
¿Puede repetir el nombre, por favor?
El periodista Anel Vélez.
Gracias.
Que provocó un ataque de milicianos de Alja Noriega contra las oficinas del Departamento de Tránsito, donde se está reorganizando la fuerza pública.
Also, sources close to Mr. Hernandez say that Ana Belis, the spokesperson for the Indara regime, also said that militia forces pro-Noriega forces attacked the Transport Department and the Ministry of Transport, where, in fact, the Mandarin middle class and civil service is trying to be organized. Gracias.
Vicepresidente y ministro de Gobierno y Justicia, Ricardo Arias Calderón. Los atacantes también fueron enfrentados por soldados norteamericanos y quedó uno de ellos muerto.
The Minister of Justice and the Vice President, Vice Prime Minister, found themselves in this building during the time of the attack. Again, they were repulsed. The attackers were repulsed by American troops, one dead and one wounded in this encounter. Gracias. Sigue, por favor.
En estos momentos, acabo de regresar de la calle. Ya se inició el toque de queda hace una hora y media. Y en las barriadas, los vecinos se están constituyendo en comité de vecinos para defender sus casas de los ataques de las bandas de ladrones que los estaban amenazando.
Basically, the curfew came in an hour and a half ago, and I've just come out of the streets. And neighborhood committees all over the city, especially in the poorer neighborhoods, are basically setting up their own vigilante groups to basically counter what seem to be bands of thieves roaming around the city now that it's dark, and basically robbing and looting as they go. Otra preguntita más, un segundo, por favor. Basically, just to add another point is that not only have these neighborhood committees basically organized to such a point that they're actually blocking all major roads, all roads with cars, with tires and barricades, they're also seem to be some of them at least relatively well armed. Un segundo, por favor. Otra pregunta del entrevistador, please.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you, Silvio Hernandez, let me just tell the audience here at WPAI and our audience out in Stony Brook at WUSB, you're listening to a live broadcast, a special programming here at WBAI that has to do with the U.S. invasion and intervention in Panama. My name is Dennis Bernstein. We're speaking live to Panama now to Silvio Hernandez. Mr. Hernandez is a reporter for IPS. He's a correspondent for IPS News Service, and he's speaking to us just after coming in from the curfew that was declared in Panama. I want to ask you, Mr. Hernandez, we have reports today that some members of the PDF, the Panama Defense Forces, launched some kind of attack on the Southern Command headquarters. Do you have any information on that, or did you hear about that from any of your colleagues?
Le tenemos una pregunta. Fuerzas leales al general Noriega, ¿es verdad los reportes que estas fuerzas atacaron al centro del Southern Command en Panamá, en la ciudad?
Sí, la atacaron hoy en la mañana.
Yes, so he confirms that. They did attack this morning.
No se conocen muchos detalles del hecho, porque eso es un lugar inaccesible a los periodistas.
He also said that there isn't really any room for maneuver for proving or disproving this claim because journalistic movement by journalists is very severely limited in the city. Pero lo poco que sabe, ¿nos puede decir simplemente lo que usted sabe de este ataque?
La información que ha circulado, sobre todo entre periodistas, que han recibido distintas versiones, es que un comando armado atacó la base de Quarry 6, que es donde funciona la sede del Comando Sur. Eso está ubicado en el límite entre la zona urbana de la capital panameña y lo que era la antigua zona del canal, al norte de la capital.
Basically, the Mr. Hernandez had heard various claims and disagreements. These are merely journalistic rumors, because he says he cannot confirm or deny that this happened because he hasn't spoken to any witnesses. But basically that a group of men, a force presumed to be loyal to General Manuel Noriega, attacked the Quarry Heights Central Command of Southern Command, and as far as he knows, they were repulsed.
All right, I want to ask you now, Silvio Hernandez, speaking about journalists and the curfew, it was reported yesterday that several journalists were caught in a crossfire. A Spanish journalist, whose name is slipping me now, was killed in a crossfire that actually took place between two different groups of Americans who were mistaking each other for Panamanian Defense Forces. Do you have any information about that, the death of that journalist, or what happened in that crossfire? Can you tell us more about that?
La pregunta es, ayer murió un periodista español, es verdad, y murió bajo, se presume y se ha escuchado aquí en Nueva York, que murió entre un balaceo entre dos batallones diferentes del ejército norteamericano que se confundieron por el enemigo. ¿Es verdad esto?
Bueno, yo no tengo información de que del cruce de disparo entre soldados norteamericanos. Lo que está confirmado es que el periodista Juan Antonio Rodríguez fue muerto por disparos hechos por un soldado norteamericano.
Basically, he hasn't heard of a crossfire between American troops, but he can confirm that Juan Antonio Rodriguez, the Spanish journalist that you mentioned, was shot by an American combat officer or one member. He said, doesn't specify how many. He says at least one member.
All right. Thank you, Silvio Hernandez.
This is Robert Knight. I just received through my sources a statement from General Noriega. Have you heard this statement in Panama? Are there means by which you might have heard it? What do you know of the general and of the organization of the continuing armed resistance?
Te pregunta el periodista Robert Knight aquí en el estudio. Él obtuvo una cinta con la grabación de la voz de Antonio Noriega proclamando que él seguía en vida y que seguía en la resistencia contra los americanos, la invasión norteamericana. ¿Usted sabe algo de dónde estará el general y también qué resistencia se monta contra la invasión ahora en estos momentos?
Nos hemos planteado todos desde el primer día y nadie ha podido saber dónde se encuentra. Se presume que pudiera estar en el interior del país. En efecto, él el miércoles en la tarde dio a conocer una proclama por una red de radioemisoras estatales que estaba funcionando hasta ese día, diciendo de que la lucha era hasta vencer o morir, que iban a continuar la resistencia aunque fueran desalojados de los centros urbanos.
Entonces, resistencia ahora de momento de parte del general y las tropas leales a él, no ha habido hasta ahora ninguna resistencia, por ejemplo, en el campo de guerrilla, ese tipo de cosas que usted sabe.
Sí, anoche aquí en la zona urbana de la ciudad se escuchaban potentes descargas de artillería y presumiblemente de la Fuerza Aérea hacia el este de la capital. En los tres últimos días, el área del Distrito Especial de San Miguelito.
Un momentito, quiero traducir. Basically, the question that Robert Knight presented is that the big question everybody's been asking is, where is General Noriega? Of course, he presumes that he's in the interior of the country. He doesn't know. Wednesday night, General Noriega stated on the radio, while he still had control of the radio, that it was going to be that famous quote of live or basically live and fight or die. I asked Mr. Hernandez about the guerrilla movement in the city, and basically the only movement that he knows is basically last night, the massive artillery exchanges, or some artillery exchanges, I hate perhaps I overstressed that, that occurred in the city. ¿Nos puede explicar un poco de esas, de esta artillería, por favor?
Bueno, en esa zona se han producido combates, como decía, en los dos últimos días y medio. Vecinos de San Miguelito han conversado conmigo, me han informado que anoche continuaba el fuego de artillería y de fusilería hacia unas montañas que están a unos 20 kilómetros de ese lugar que se llama Cerro Azul, y se presume que los leales a Noriega se están replegando hacia ese lugar para poder enfrentar al ejército norteamericano en un área geográfica más propicia para una lucha irregular.
Bueno, muchas gracias. Another question from Robert Knight.
We are of the understanding that the broadcast facilities of Radio Nacional have been destroyed. What are there any means by which Panamanians could know by radio or television or other broadcast if there were such a communique? What broadcasts are working in Panama right now?
La pregunta simplemente es, se supone que Radio Nacional ahora está completamente destruida. ¿Cómo se informan y se comunican los panameños? ¿Y cuáles canales están abiertos como medios de información para la población panameña?
La población carece de diversidad de medios de comunicación, de información. De las 5 plantas televisoras que funcionaban en la capital, alguna con cobertura nacional, están todas silenciadas.
There were 5 national radio stations and TV stations, and they seem to have been shut down completely.
La única planta televisora que funciona es el canal 8 del Comando Sur.
The only thing, of course, that is still working is the channel 8, which is controlled by Comando Sur.
Da información en inglés.
One second, please.
Y luego hay una red de, que es en realidad una sola radioemisora leal a Endara, que se llama la Red Patriótica, que brinda información sobre las actuaciones del gobierno de Endara y sobre la marcha del avance del ejército norteamericano.
Un segundito, por favor, gracias. Robert Knight, please.
Then if only broadcast facilities that are under the control of the United States are operating in Panama, is it reasonable to suppose that United States authorities would attempt to prevent the broadcast of the information such as we have received?
¿Usted cree que esta cinta que nosotros tenemos en nuestra posesión, que es un comunicado del general Noriega, será interrumpido por las fuerzas leales a las a las tropas que ahora controlan las emisoras en las tropas de los Estados Unidos? ¿Ellos tratarán de impedir este mensaje llegar a la población de Panamá?
No entendí bien la pregunta.
Que si nosotros tenemos una cinta del general Noriega aquí, y esta cinta dice que, o sea, que está dispuesto a seguir combatiendo, ¿no? Un comunicado que se hizo en las últimas 12 horas de su parte. Y este comunicado se ha recibido en el Panamá, y si usted sabe si las tropas americanas tratarán de parar esta emisión.
Bueno, nosotros no lo conocemos. Aquí no se ha divulgado porque hay una sola radio que opera en el país, y es una radio leal a Endara que no admite no da información de los leales a Noriega. Da solo la información que está referida a las acciones del gobierno de Endara.
Un segundito, por favor. Basically, to hurry up and catch up, there's a much lost translation here. Basically, the question was, there is no way, according to the reporter from Panama, there is no way that any transmission can get through unless it meets the approval of the American troops. There is a pro-Endara radio station, and there is the Channel 8, and those are the only 2 means of communication allowed in Panama at the moment. One is controlled by the American forces in English. The other one is in Spanish and controlled by pro-American Endara people. Another question, please.
Just want to say thank you, Silvio Hernandez, for your report on the streets of Panama. We thank you. We urge you to be careful. And we just have this final
What level of control of motion of people is there? How restrictive are the Americans for civilians who are traveling through the different parts of the city?
¿Cuáles son las restricciones que ejerce el ejército norteamericano sobre el movimiento de la población durante el día y durante la noche en la ciudad misma de Panamá?
Bueno, hay algunas áreas, como son las áreas que fueron bombardeadas, como es el caso del Chorrillo.
El Chorrillo and the bombed areas, for instance.
Donde hay una vigilancia del ejército norteamericano.
There is much movement and much vigilance on part of the American troops. Sigue.
Y después en la alrededor de la embajada de Cuba y de Nicaragua, donde tienen apostado.
Around the Cuban and Nicaraguan embassies.
Que no permiten pasar a la población por algunos de esos lugares.
There is absolutely no permitted movement around any of these areas by the general population. ¿Qué tal eso de la embajada ahora de Cuba y Nicaragua? ¿Cómo va sigue la situación allá, por favor? Basically, my question was, what is happening in the Nicaraguan and the Cuban embassies and their compounds? Basically, these people in the compounds have been trapped and have not been allowed to move out at all of their compounds. Por favor, sigue con la descripción. ¿Cuántos tanques hay ahí, por favor? ¿Qué personal, qué artillería, qué tienen los americanos allá?
Bueno, en eso yo tendría que ser un experto para saber qué tipo de técnica militar poseen.
¿Pero hay muchos tanques ahí, por ejemplo?
No puedo tener una idea porque nunca los vi juntos. Se ven en caravanas de 10, de 15, de 3, en distintas partes.
Pero las hay adelante de la embajada, las dos embajadas, ¿no? ¿Es verdad o no ese comentario?
Tres había frente a la embajada de Cuba.
Basically, the report in Panama is saying that he's seen many convoys of tanks, 10, 3, 2, 5, in varying numbers. At the moment, he says there are 3 tanks in front of the Cuban embassy. ¿Y ante la de Nicaragua, cuántos hay?
Unos 3 o 4 también.
Again, 3 or 4 tanks in front of the Nicaraguan embassy. ¿Y personal, tropas, infantería, tienen completamente relevado las embajadas, sí o no? Yes, there was in fact a roadblock, and in fact there was some troop movement surrounding the embassy and inside, and of course the personnel carriers.
La presencia de las tropas y los blindados norteamericanos está referida a un área muy pequeña de la capital. Están en lo que es el denominado casco viejo hasta la barriada de Bellavista. Y ocasionalmente incursionan por lo que es el centro bancario cerca de esa área, pero el resto de la ciudad está sin vigilancia.
Hello, okay, muchas gracias por la llamada que nos has dado. Aquí te paso al ingeniero Boris.
Silvio, me gustaría agradecerte por haber tomado esta atención con nosotros.
You're listening to a simulcast with WBAI in New York. This is WUSB Stony Brook. If you've tuned in for Rocking Iration, that program will be coming your way in just about an hour at 9 o'clock. You're listening now to special coverage of the Panama invasion.
Muchas gracias por haber estado con nosotros. Te estaremos llamando mañana o el mismo día lunes.
Yo te pregunté por el nombre de la radio.
Oh, es WBAI.
WBAI, ajá.
99.5 frecuencia modulada. Okay, chao, muchas gracias.
Hasta pronto.
Basically, we just had a live call from Panama. The journalist Mr. and Silvio Hernandez, excuse me. And basically, just I was a translator on this, and just a couple of points that I'd like to point out that Silvio said. He basically pointed to the fact that there was tonight an increased artillery bombardment of an area called Cerro Azul, which is 20 kilometers near, I don't know where geographically it lies, but 20 kilometers beyond the San Miguelito neighborhood in Panama City. And this is where journalists have rumors in Panama City that this is where the remainder of the Panamanian Defense Force is now congregated. There is no confirmation as to whether this is true. This is just one journalist's rumor passed on to us and the radio station. That basically, that's the only important point that I think that I might have forgotten. Thank
you. Terrific. Well, we want to thank Silvio Hernandez, who just joined us live from Panama, correspondent with IPS News, for that information in which you heard some very interesting things, like, for instance, how groups, local groups, have taken control of their own neighborhoods, armed groups who are trying to prevent vigilante sort of arming bands of roaming bands of armed people who are doing looting, coming in and out, so that there are roadblocks that by these local groups who have taken control of their own neighborhoods. We had confirmed that there was an attack on the Southern Command by the Panamanian Defense Forces, which was apparently repelled. We have confirmation, at least from Silvio Hernandez, that the journalist, the Spanish journalist who was killed by an American soldier. There was an attack on, I guess it was, they're trying to set up headquarters somewhere for the new...
From what I understood, and this is the, I understood correctly, I don't know, as I point out, whether this is true or not, but Silvio Hernandez did say that 20 kilometers further on from the San Miguelito neighborhood, I don't know where that is geographically, perhaps Boris, where is that geographically?
I do not know, but what Dennis meant is that they did attack the legislature house, is the building where they're having the new president.
Right, and there was an attack on
that.
There
was an attack on that by the civilians loyal to Noriega.
Right.
But they were repelled and they killed one of the civilians. But at the same time, the vice president was in there.
And also the justice minister was there as well.
Was in that
was in
legislative
that building,
house
yes, was in
where
that
they're trying to seat the new government.
Where they're trying to seat the new government and basically get, from what I understood, the civil service organized again.
Okay, well, we want to thank you also, Alex Villard, for doing that very good translation and being very patient with us. We thank you very much for helping us out on this special on WBAI about the invasion of Panama. We want
thank
to take
you.
Thank you very much. And we want to take a musical break, a cart break. Then we're going to come back with an interview I did with Frank LaRue, which is very interesting, about relationship between Guatemala, what happens in Guatemala, what happens in Panama. Then you can hear a first-hand interview with a woman who was slashed, an International Peace Brigade worker, who was from Washington, D.C., who was slashed and attacked in Guatemala, and there was really no major outcry by the U.S. government and certainly no invasion of Guatemala. Some music, a cart, and on to that interview.
And you are listening to WUSB in Stony Brook. Our coverage, our simulcast with WBAI will continue in a moment. Rocking Iration is coming up at 9 o'clock.
Zuckerman from Music Without Words, Thursdays at 9 to 10:30, wishing you a very happy holiday. Join us here at USB as we leap forward into the 90s.
Democratically elected leaders of Panama were sworn in and assumed their rightful positions. They welcome and support
our... The difference is that the Soviet Union supports democracy by staying out. The United States did it by going in.
During primary objectives has gone well. Just to review them quickly, 11 dead, 59 wounded, one missing, between 50 and 100 near Seoul,
This is WUSB Stony Brook.
You are listening to WBAI in New York. My name is Dennis Bernstein. I've been here for at least a dozen hours as the sort of traffic monitor of this special broadcasting on WBAI's airwaves. This broadcasting that begun days ago when we decided that the invasion of Panama required full-time coverage, and the staff of WBAI has been very generous and stayed here for you, and we thank those of you who have called at 1-800-845-9000 for your generosity. We know many, many of you have called to support this coverage. We want to encourage more of you to call and allow us to do the work that we need to do here to keep open
this free speech radio. Let me introduce for you now what's coming up, which is an interview I did earlier with Guatemalan human rights attorney Frank LaRue, who was in exile from Guatemala. He left that country in 1981 under threat of death, and I spoke with Frank LaRue about a number of different things, and about an incident that took place, I guess, about a month ago, in which an American nun was molested, tortured, burned, beaten, and the United States government did not invade Guatemala. This is Frank LaRue, and I guess, I'm not sure if it starts with me or him, and I think it's a very interesting piece. Are you with us, Mr. LaRue?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon.
Thanks for joining us. Frank LaRue, I would like you to listen just for one moment to essentially a minute of a press conference that was recorded yesterday in which George Bush gives a bit of the justification for going into Panama, and he's asked by a reporter about what he's going to tell Gorbachev about this invasion into Panama.
Okay.
The Soviets have criticized very sharply the decision of yours to the point of saying they're going forward and the United States is going backwards. What is your reaction to this?
My reaction is I need to get on a wire there or in a telegram or something, explain this to Mr. Gorbachev. It's not altogether surprising that he doesn't understand some of the special arrangements that the United States has in Panama. It's not surprising that he doesn't fully understand that this freely elected man had been deprived of the democracy. And I also need to let him know, look, if American Marine is killed, if they kill an American Marine, that's real bad. And if they threaten and brutalize the wife of an American citizen, sexually threatening the lieutenant's wife while kicking him in the groin over and over again, then, Mr. Gorbachev, please understand, this president is going to do something about it.
Well, Attorney Frank LaRue, human rights attorney, you heard what the president said. You threaten an American citizen. You threaten an American woman with rape, with molestation. The United States government is going to do something about it. George Bush is going to act. Well, I understand that there was a situation in Guatemala that included much more than a threat against an American woman. And I don't understand there to be very much response. I'm wondering if you could outline that situation and give your response.
No, well, that's very clear. You see, it's interesting to see that the protection of American citizens is always used as an excuse when it's very convenient for the policies of the president. In the case of Sister Diana Ortiz, who you're mentioning, she was a North American missionary stationed in Guatemala, who was abducted by three men, then was taken in a police car, Guatemala police car, driven by uniformed policemen of Guatemala to a torture house, a torture chamber, where she also heard other people being tortured at the same time, that same evening. Eventually, she was released. Someone who she thinks was a North American came and released her. A North American was in good relationship with those that were torturing her. She had 111 burns, with cigarette burns in her back. That's the doctor's report here in the States when she returned to this country. And we never saw a reaction of the State Department. As a matter of fact, up to this day, the official testimony of the State Department and the embassy is to doubt her testimony, saying that since she did not agree to meet with them, with the embassy in Guatemala, because she feared even them, they should challenge her version of the events. So clearly there's a double standard in who is who and how to protect. I mean, it seems to me that a North American missionary in Guatemala is not the type of person that President Bush is referring to and that he would be willing to react. In terms of dictatorships, I mean, it's clear that it's interesting that he talks about dictators, and Noriega may be a dictator, may be connected to drug trafficking, but what the Guatemalan military have been connected to the worst horrors and violation of human rights in history, in denounced by Amnesty International, America's Watch, and that has never worried the Pentagon or the State Department in terms of the relationship with them. So it seems to me that there's always a double standard being used. I mean, those that fall in a bad relationship with the United States will get sacked and will be accused of being evil men. but those that do atrocities against your own population, but as long as they keep a good relationship, will be acceptable to this administration.
I'm wondering, Frank LaRue, first of all, I imagine it's understandable why people were hesitant, why a molested woman might be hesitant to go into the embassy, the U.S. embassy in Guatemala, and be afraid, because we have seen what happened with the witness of the killing of the Jesuits in El Salvador. She was given up to U.S. custody, and now she says she was threatened with deportation. The Archbishop of El Salvador says that she was authentically brainwashed. So there is certainly some reason for people to be afraid in terms of being protected by the United States government. Frank LaRue, first of all, just give a little bit more of your own background. I want to talk to you a little bit more about what's going on in Guatemala as compared to Panama, but just give us a sense of your own background and why you left Guatemala.
Well, I was a labor lawyer in Guatemala, and I used to work with the trade union movement. I was an advisor for a confederation called the Central Nacional de Trabajadores, the CNT, and I worked as an advisor up to 1981 when I was forced to leave the country together with all the other legal advisors of the union. One of my colleagues returned, a woman, Yolanda Aguilar, returned in 1982, and she was abducted and disappeared, and she has never reappeared since then. And this is one more case of hundreds of people related to the labor movement that have disappeared in Guatemala.
Okay, Frank LaRue, Manuel Noriega does not have a reputation for being a sweetheart. There are many reports that he was involved in some relation to drug trafficking and to the sort of the banking relationship to drug trafficking in Panama. There are reports that he was involved in intimidation, and that his PDF forces were involved in some cases of torture, of mistreatment, of human rights violations, and there's an indication by the center from the Council on Hemispheric Affairs that perhaps they were investigating as many as perhaps 70 human rights violations on the part of the PDF defense forces under Manuel Noriega. How does that report of perhaps 70 cases stack up to the situation very precisely in Guatemala?
Well, again, I think there's no real comparison. I don't like to fall into the game of numbers. I don't think one can compare human rights violations in terms of numbers, but one can really compare human rights violations in terms of the degree of oppression against the people, no? And in that sense, I can tell you that Guatemala is comparable to none. The situation in Guatemala has been the worst, like I mentioned, in the hemisphere in the past. Just recently, between the 21st and 22nd of August, for instance, the core leadership of the National Student Association, 7 students were abducted, 4 of their bodies were already found mutilated and tortured. Last night, yesterday, by the way, there was an attack against what's called the Peace Brigades International, which is a group, a peace group, that is essentially doing escort services by international people accompanying Guatemalans that are suffering persecution because they have a leadership position in the popular movement. There were 3 people, 2 women and 1 man, 2 of them from Canada and 1 North American from Washington, D.C., as a matter of fact, who were attacked by an armed man who knifed them several times. They were in the hospital. They're now safe. And there has been no mention of that event in the press here.
Do you have the names of these people, Frank LaRue?
Well, the North American woman from Washington, D.C., her last name is Larson. And
All right, and there's been no response yet on the part of the U.S. government?
Absolutely no response. I mean, people, the general attitude of the embassy when you mention these cases is to say this is common delinquency. You know, when the Peace Brigade had the grenade thrown at their offices about a month and a half ago. So clearly all this is part of a political intimidation. If you see the case of, you were telling me the case of the witness to the Jesuits, or the case of Jennifer Casolo in El Salvador, for instance, where the Bush administration offered the FBI to support the investigation against her by the Salvadoran government, one gets the distinct feeling that those North American citizens that are in those countries and are witnessing the repression and the violation of human rights are actually getting harassed with the total consent of the U.S. Embassy in both countries. That is why Sister Ortiz, for instance, seeks refuge at the house of the nuncio. She was protected by the apostolic nuncio, who is a diplomat from the Vatican, and refused any contact, any protection from the North American Embassy, although she was a North American citizen.
We are speaking with the human rights attorney, Guatemalan Frank LaRue, who was forced to flee at threat of death. his country, Guatemala, in 1981. Frank Lewis told us about a very ugly situation in which an American nun was abducted, tortured. I understand she was burned multiple times with a cigarette. She was molested, tortured, and then ultimately she was released. By the way, why did they release her? They usually don't release people that they abduct. Those people usually never are seen again.
Well, that's right. And in her case, it's even worse because the fact that she saw a policeman in uniform and she was driven in a police car gives you an indication that their plan was never to release her. Otherwise, they wouldn't have let her see uniformed men or marked cars. The idea is that they were planning to assassinate her. The only reason why this became a scandal is because her own orders, religious Ursuline sisters, began contacting members of Congress here in the States. The embassy had done nothing over there. When they went to the embassy told them they had to wait 24 hours before anything was done because it could be just a case of tourism and she could have left the country voluntarily. So what the sisters did was to contact their headquarters here in the States. And it was the headquarters here that began making a lot of pressure in Congress, and there was an immediate response. And it was that that ultimately made things change dramatically in Guatemala, but not any initiative from the embassy itself.
All right, Frank LaRue, I just want to tell our listeners that we will have, after we finish our interview with you, Meredith Larson, who is the North American from Washington, D.C., who was in fact attacked in Guatemala, I believe, yesterday, and we're really interested to see if the U.S. government is going to respond to this in a similar way. I imagine, Frank LaRue, that you are not interested in having the United States government respond similarly, i.e. with an invasion of your country, Guatemala, even though it is under a great deal of the people there are under a great deal of pressure and under great threat. I understand some reports have it that as many as five people a day have been abducted and are kidnapped, are disappearing. I'm wondering if you could compare Guatemala to Panama in terms of U.S. involvement and what you think the U.S. government could have done in Panama or what you would have prefer to see them do in Panama, and how you would see them establish a different kind of relationship with your country, Guatemala.
Well, I cannot speak to the situation of Panama because obviously I'm not knowledgeable enough on the situation there. I could tell you that in the case of Guatemala, definitely the solution to the problems of Guatemala is not a U.S. invasion. The history of Guatemala has been such that every time the U.S. gets involved, it gets involved in the wrong side. The tragedy of Guatemala currently began in 1954 with the coup against the Arbenz government, the last democratic government of Guatemala. And it was the beginning of a new era of foreign policy for the United States. It was the Eisenhower period that, with the coup in Iran that put the Shah in power and the coup in Guatemala that toppled the democratic government of Arbenz. It was the beginning of using covert operations as a way of getting rid of governments they did not like. And that was subsequently used in Chile and other places. No, it is very clear, I think, that one cannot decide whether you like a government or not, and on the basis of whether you like it or not, decide to intervene, either covertly or overtly, whether in Dominican Republic or in Panama. It's not a question of whether you defend a government or not. That's not the question. The question is, does the U.S. abide by international principles? The real hemispheric issue for the OAS, the Organization of American States, at this moment is, does the question of Panama pose a threat to the entire hemisphere in terms of their sovereignty? And in a way, it does. And I think this has nothing to do with sympathy for anyone. I mean, I doubt that anyone would sympathize personally with Noriega. But it clearly has to do with the fact that people are very jealous about their own self-determination and the fact that it's the peoples of each nation that have to decide their own government.
All right, Frank LaRue, we're joined in the studio now by our program director, Andrew Phillips, and he has a question for you.
Well, it's as much a statement and an introduction, because I was in Guatemala City, Frank, I think it was 2 years ago in April, when you came down there with Rigoberto Menchú and were arrested at the airport. You obviously remember that.
That's right, yes.
And I think you were detained for about 8 hours, and then you were let go. Just briefly, I know it's not quite on the point, but what happened? I've always wanted to know. I never found out.
Well, the whole issue was that it was basically an issue of harassment. There was always trumped up charges that were then denied, and subsequently we were all allowed to stay in the country indefinitely as long as we wished. It was just a matter of harassing people that we wanted to return to the country. Guatemala is a country where even exiles have a difficulty of returning.
All right. We thank you, Frank LaRue, for joining us on this very special...
Thank you very much for the conversation, and I hope we'll have a chance to follow it up.
Thanks so much, Frank LaRue, human rights attorney, Guatemalan exile who left the country under threat of death in 1981, speaking to us from Washington, D.C. We are now going to go to an interview with Meredith Larson. You heard Frank LaRue refer to one of the members of the International Peace Brigaders, who an American, a North American from Washington, D.C., who was slashed by ununiformed, by marauders or by armed people in the streets of Guatemala yesterday. This is an American citizen under attack in Guatemala. Also joining me in the studio to do the interview is Amy Goodman.
Hello, Meredith. Are you there?
Yes, hi, Amy. I am.
Meredith, why don't you first just describe what happened on Wednesday night?
Okay. I happened to be coming back from an assignment. I called for some companions to meet me, to walk me down the street, because our street is not completely well lit. They came and they met me, and we walked back in a group of three as a security measure. What happened was, about a block from our house, as we're passing near a store, and we passed into a reasonably well-lit area. Once we stepped into the light, two men rushed us immediately. He charged at my chest with a knife and started stabbing me. I blocked him with my arm, so I have the most severe cut in my arm, but I have several wounds in the chest area. I had a large bag, which I swung at him, which he made no attempt to grab or to grab my money, which hangs around my neck. Instead, what happened, I tripped on the ground. The bag fell. They didn't attempt to grab the bag either after that. Instead, they ran after my two companions, one who was stabbed several times in the chest area, the other whom was slashed in the wrist. We all were screaming, and I went rushing towards our house because it's the place I chose to go at the time, and I was bleeding severely. Within a matter of minutes, my companions joined me at the door, and we went up to the hospital, and there we were stitched up. I had to spend the night there. We do not think that this was an ordinary robbery. We believe it is an attack on us as Peace Brigades International, not necessarily an attack, let's say, on myself or my other two companions. It wasn't just us. It's because of who we represent. What happens to be chance, we believe, because it was us. We think for several reasons. One, just because there was no attempt, no mention made of taking money or possessions, nor was there an attempt to take my bag, which was very easy to take. And also, it happened as soon as we stepped into the light, which struck us as very odd. Additionally, there could have been a number of people they could have robbed walking in ones and twos in a well-off neighborhood, and they were going two against three. So we think it wasn't a planned attack on ourselves as an organization. Previously, on August 15th, we were bombed. Our offices were bombed. Two grenades were thrown at the house at the same time that the mutual support group, the GOM, was bombed a few minutes before we were additionally received. We had received death threats in May when we were escorting members of the RUAC who had come into the country to participate in national dialogue. So we see this as another step in the intimidation against our organization and increasing standards of oppression here in Guatemala. And I'm lucky. I'm a foreigner. I'm not a Guatemalan. I'm lucky. I think that's why they just tried to hurt me. I don't believe they're trying to kill me. I think they want to scare me. But there are other people here who are Guatemalans who are not so lucky and they go on. That's the people who are really important here.
The two people you were with are Canadian, is that right?
Yes, they're Canadian.
You know, it's hard just hearing this description to go on to talk about what is the Peace Brigade, because I guess it's after a trauma like that, it's just a day and a half after. It must be very difficult to talk
about.
Yeah,
I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to pass the phone to my companion, Jamie Skinner, and she can tell you about that. Here she is.
Meredith?
Huh?
Just one second. Dennis Bernstein would like to ask you a question.
Meredith Larson, I mean, after this wounding, I have to ask you, how is it that you managed to survive and get out of the country? Who helped you to...
I'm not out of the country.
Oh, you're still
from Guatemala.
Okay, then let me ask you this. Do you now feel that you are still under jeopardy, in danger, and what are you doing in terms of preventing further actions like this? You know, how are you protecting yourself?
We're now meeting with a number of people in the government, half in the government, and the chief of the police, we're meeting with this afternoon, talking about a protection. We've met with the embassies, we've met with the U.S. ambassador. We're taking a number of measures in that area. We're also talking about increased security measures for our team that we will be taking. None of us are out of the country. We're all still here. I have no plans to leave right now. I'm sorry, I'm not sure if I completely cut your question. What did you say?
We're talking with Meredith Larson right now. She works with the Peace Brigade. She's an American citizen down in Guatemala City. And on Wednesday night, when she was coming home with two companions, two Canadian Peace Brigade members, she was brutally attacked by two men. And that we are speaking with Meredith Larson right now. And we'd like to ask about what the Peace Brigade is. And Meredith, if you don't feel up to talking about it, if you could pass this on to another person at the Peace Brigade house.
Yes, I will. Here is Janie Skinner.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Janie Skinner. I'm a member of the team here in Guatemala.
Hi, Janie. I'm Amy Goodman, and I'm here in the WBAI studio with Dennis Bernstein. Can you tell us a little what Peace Brigade is?
Sure. Peace Brigade International is an organization based in Gandhian principles of nonviolence that started in 1981, has had a presence in Guatemala since 1983. We go to areas of the world that experience conflict and try to seek to build a nonviolent way to reaching peace there. So that means that we work on the principles of dialogue, on negotiation, and we also are something of an international witness. In Guatemala, concretely, our work is realized through an accompaniment of individuals or organizations that are feeling threatened. Due to the violence here, we also do workshops teaching those skills of nonviolence that I mentioned before, like negotiation and nonviolent conflict resolution. And we publish a bulletin that we send out to people who are interested in our perspective on what's happening inside the country.
I'd like to ask, on Wednesday night, it was not only the Meredith Larson and the two Canadians who were attacked, but soon after that, the second secretary, Nicaraguan secretary, to the Nicaraguan ambassador in Guatemala was assassinated. Is that right?
Yes.
Was this all in a span of a few hours?
Amy, there's a lot of interference here. I'm having trouble hearing you.
Okay. Was this all in a span of a few hours? Can you hear that?
Was this all within a span of a few hours? I'm not sure at what hour the Nicaraguan was assassinated. It was 7 p.m. when our members of our team were attacked. I believe it must have been somewhat near the same hour.
Okay, I'd also like to ask how we were just speaking with Guatemalan lawyer Frank LaRue about the conditions in Guatemala right now, but our coverage right now is of the U.S. invasion of Panama, and we've been looking at the effect of this invasion on the rest of Central America, looking at it in El Salvador and now in Guatemala. And I'm wondering, since the invasion, what kind of effect have you felt there as a grassroots activist on the ground, on the people of Guatemala and on activists like yourself, on witnesses?
I'm not sure I understand your question. What effect have the events in Panama and El Salvador had here from what I can see on the ground?
Right.
The El Salvador has had a very evident effect. Panama is fairly new, and so we're still seeing what way the sand is going to fall, you know? I would say that there's been greater tension since Panama. Everyone's eyes are sort of riveted there. The El Salvador has been a much more notable, partly because it's also very much closer. The level of rhetoric used within the country by all political actors has changed in tone since the time of the events in El Salvador. There has been talk of whether the Central America peace plan still has any meaning here in Central America. Our principles are very much based in the same ideas as that peace plan, and so our work has been affected by that sort of discarding by many political sectors of the peace plan.
Okay, we're speaking with a member of the Peace Brigade is live from Guatemala, and we're talking about a situation in which several members of the International Peace Brigade in Guatemala were attacked and slashed yesterday. You heard us interviewing Meredith Larson just a minute ago. She was slashed and brutally attacked. I want to ask, I want to put this question out to the Peace Brigaders in Guatemala. Why, what kind of response has the United States government had to this plethora of attacks by various members of the Guatemalan security forces, death squads? Janie Skinner, please tell me what kind of response has come forth from the United States government. Has our government, has this government of this country stood up for you and protested?
Well, in respect to the death squad activities and other attacks on other individuals in the country, I'm not the most adequate person to respond. In terms of the bombing attack on us and the slashing 2 nights ago, the response from the embassy has been supportive. They have come to our offices to visit us, to see that the victims are all right. We were
an assignment for Spain's leading daily, El País. According to information reaching Spain, Rodriguez was shot by the U.S. troops who have invaded Panama. The Organization of American States today condemned the U.S. invasion of Panama, and the United States, stung by the criticism, accused the OAS of siding with the world's tyrants. "We are outraged," State Department spokesperson Richard Boucher told a regular news briefing. "The OAS missed a historic opportunity to get beyond its traditional narrow concern with non-intervention." An OAS resolution today condemned the invasion and urged Washington to withdraw the more than 9,000 troops it ordered into Panama to capture General Noriega. After a stormy overnight session, the 32-member OAS passed a sharply worded resolution rebuking the United States for the invasion. The vote was 20 in favor of censuring Washington and 1, the United States, against. 6 countries abstained and 5 were absent when the vote was cast. These included Grenada, the tiny Caribbean island invaded by U.S. forces in 1983. Defending the U.S. action at the Marathon OAS meeting, U.S. Ambassador Luigi Einaudi said early today the hemispheric body was improperly invoking the principle of non-intervention, a rule the OAS holds sacred. Quoting from Einaudi's speech, Boucher said that in the case of Panama, the OAS will find itself cast on the side of the dictators and tyrants of the world. Latin American diplomats, however, noted that most of the countries that voted to condemn Washington had been sharply critical of Noriega since he voided elections last May, in which his hand-picked candidate was apparently soundly beaten by opposition leader Guillermo Andrade. One delegate said, "Detesting Noriega does not mean agreeing with the use of U.S. force in a sovereign country." The third day of the U.S. invasion of Panama brought more disapproval than support from the world's governments. In 2 major international forums where diplomats exchange views on world's events, the United Nations and the OAS, speaker after speaker accused the U.S. of violating international laws on national sovereignty. A third forum, the European community, said it was very concerned about the situation in Panama following the U.S. intervention and called for peace and a return to democracy. At the United Nations, where the Security Council has been debating the invasion since Wednesday night, only Britain, Canada, and El Salvador have come to the defense of the United States. Citing an article of the United Nations Charter, the U.S. said it went into Panama in self-defense after General Manuel Noriega established a political climate in which Americans were being attacked and harassed in Panama. Some of the United States' Western European allies and Australia, while not going as far as Britain in giving total support, have said separately that they understand the circumstances which persuaded President Bush to take military action. Meanwhile, 7 non-aligned members of the UN Security Council drew up a resolution today that they hope to present during the debate that would strongly deplore the U.S. action in Panama. The draft called the intervention a flagrant violation of international laws governing the independence, sovereignty, and integrity of states. The United States has the power to veto any council resolution critical of its actions. As the U.S. invasion of Panama nears its fourth day, an increasing number of voices in Washington have raised concerns about the potential costs of what has generally been reported thus far as a successful display of U.S. muscle. Those concerns range from the narrow questions of whether General Noriega will be apprehended, a major focus of current U.S. military efforts, and how long U.S. troops will have to enforce order in Panama, to the larger issues of the invasion's impact on regional, hemispheric, and even superpower relations. Former Assistant Secretary of State for Inter-American Affairs, Ambassador Viron Vakey, told the Los Angeles Times today, "In the long run, we're going to be sorry we did this. Much depends on whether and how quickly the new Panamanian president, who was sworn in on a U.S. Army base in the Canal Zone at the precise moment the invasion got underway, establishes his authority. In that respect, the first days of the Guillermo Andrade government, which Washington considers legitimate by virtue of his apparent victory in last May's aborted elections, are not considered auspicious." "He's going to get out in the streets," said Senator Christopher Dodd, chair of the Senate's Western Hemisphere Committee, "but that seemed impossible today," which, despite continued assurances by top Pentagon officials that ordered that order was being restored in Panama City, witnessed a series of bold attacks by Noriega loyalists against U.S. and opposition targets. And while only Britain, Luxembourg, and Dominica have recognized the new president thus far, U.S. officials are not helping to establish the appearance of Andara's independence. Asked whether Andara had requested the U.S. invasion after being sworn in as president, White House spokesperson Marlon Fitzwater stressed to reporters today that we did it on our own. We discussed it with them, but they did not ask. The fate of Noriega himself will be key, in the words of one senior administration official. If he remains at large, Andara is not going to feel secure, and if we don't catch him, we're going to look ridiculous because we told everyone he was a major obstacle. Another pressing question here is how long U.S. troops will be in charge of maintaining or even securing order. While Andara predicted that troops could be withdrawn within a month, U.S. Congress members, including the highly influential Armed Service Committee Chair, Representative Les Aspin, said that U.S. troops could still be patrolling Panamanian streets a year from now. The important thing to many lawmakers is for Washington to avoid, quote, becoming a permanent occupying force. This according to Sam Nunn, the Senate's top defense specialist. But many analysts, including American University's Professor Philip Brenner and Alex Wild, the head of the church-backed Washington Office on Latin America, believe that may indeed be the result. "Panama is a tar baby," Wild told Interpress Service, "and I don't see how we're going to get out soon. A lengthy stay by U.S. forces will carry major domestic and international costs, according to experts, and particularly if Noriega or Noriega loyalists manage to mount a guerrilla movement." "If American fatalities climb over 100, said former U.S. National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski, "I would not be at all surprised to see a shift in public opinion against the president." It would also confirm fears by a number of South American countries that this week's invasion by Washington marks a return to the days of gunboat diplomacy. Venezuela and even staunch U.S. ally Honduras have already announced that it will not recognize the Andrade government until all U.S. troops have been withdrawn. And finally, I want to read you one description of what's happening in Panama City. This is by a Reuters reporter, David Harris. A word picture is worth a lot. "A man walked down a Panama City street today with a toaster on his head. He paused for a minute, grinned, and said, 'This is my Christmas present from President Bush.' Sadly, only the looters are having a happy Christmas in Panama these days. Thousands of others have seen their businesses and homes destroyed. A wave of refugees will probably spend Christmas in stadiums or the streets. The U.S. invasion of Panama has triggered a wave of shooting and looting that is devastating the city from its slums to its rich suburbs. It is like we have been raped," said a civil engineer who blamed the United States for throwing his country into turmoil. He said, "They didn't think about the social consequences. It's going to take 3 or 4 years to rebuild and much longer, if ever, to heal our wounds." The streets around the downtown banking district were strewn this morning with debris and rotting garbage. Every shop had been ransacked, every supermarket looted. U.S. troop convoys pass through the streets, shots are fired, and when the soldiers pass from sight, the looters return. Residents in the sprawling slum of San Miguelito said there was heavy fighting overnight, including attacks by U.S. aircraft. A university professor said he had his bags packed. "If I was a military man, I'd go to the mountains, not because I support Noriega, but because of my nationalism. It is like we've been raped." And that was a report by Reuters correspondent David Harris. Back to you, Dennis.
That's an amazing report from Reuters there, and it certainly seems to sum up what it looks like from here. That's obviously a closer view. We are concluding now some, 12, 14 hours of programming emergency programming having to do with the situation in Panama, the invasion of the United States government into Panama. It's a tragic situation. It's causing untold suffering and loss, and that suffering is apparently going to continue for some time. We're going to continue covering this war, this occupation, until something happens, but we're going to be here doing our best to give you information.
But in order to do that, we need your support to preempt the kind of programming that we've been doing in these last 3 or 4 days. We need your help. It takes a special concerted effort of the station. It takes everyone being...
And you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, New York. We're doing a simulcast with WBAI and their special coverage of the war in Panama. We'll be continuing this until 9 o'clock tonight, at which time Rocking Iration comes your way until 10. And we'll be continuing this coverage as events warrant. Again, this is WUSB, Stony Brook, New York. We'd like to hear what you have to think of this kind of coverage. You can phone us off-air, 632-6901.
Supported station. Listener-supported station, such an important station in a time like this, in a time when the only news reports are coming from, or the only news pictures, many of them are coming from the Pentagon, a very tailored picture, a planned picture of you, what you can see down in Panama. We're trying to bring you dissenting opinion. We're trying to bring you alternative pictures. It's very difficult to reach people in Panama. As we were saying earlier today, in calling Silvio Hernandez in Panama, he begged us after we talked to call his main headquarters of Interpress Service in Costa Rica because he could not reach them to file a report. We were getting a report before Interpress Service was. So give us a call at 1-800-845-9000 and pledge $45.
Because we have lost our support, and if you want to hear
our voice,
or both.
We're hoping not to lose our voices.
but we are here, and we want to continue to be able to talk to you, and also to be able to bring you information and culture and music and all the things that we do here at WBAI, and we need your help to do that. 1-800-845-9000. Amy, I think what I'd like to do is, let the listeners, some of the listeners, have the last word. We've been here broadcasting, and throughout the day we've been giving listeners a chance. I wonder if you'd stay in with me and sort of take a few phone calls. Who knows?
Sure.
Maybe we'll somebody will beat us up just what we need at 10 to 9.
And we'd like to hear what you've been seeing on the networks,
yes.
What kind of contrast you see between what you've been hearing there and on radio and with WBAI, the new information you've gotten here. Information you question. Let's talk about it. 212-279-3400. Let us know what you think. And to you WUSB listeners, give us a call, too. We like to hear from you out on Eastern
Absolutely.
Long Island.
And I was out there, Amy, last week or the week before, in a, you know, speaking at some kind of alternative press conference. And I had a chance to go up to WUSB, and it's a nice little radio station there. I walked
right at the university.
Right at the university, walked into the program. There's a wonderful reggae program. He interrupted his programming to interview Robin and myself about Noriega and Panama and El Salvador and you name it. And so we're happy to have WUSB listeners along. 212-279-3400. Let's invite you to call us now. WBAI, you are with us on the end of this very long broadcasting day. That's
Hi.
You. Hi.
I wonder whether, considering what the United States is doing now that it's down there, like rounding people up and examining them as to what they did, putting some of them in camps, whether this puts a new light on the absence of support for the coup. The last coup attempt that was possibly Panamanian. If that had succeeded, and things had been run by the Panamanians down there, the United States would not have had the control that it has or is seeking now, and I wonder whether the lack of support was because the United States wanted to have the control that it knew it wouldn't have last time.
That's a very interesting point, caller. Very interesting point. The idea that this thing about the last coup and Bush didn't get behind it and all this stuff, and then they were saying, essentially what the administration said at that time is that really, in essence, we didn't get behind it because we didn't feel it was, we couldn't get certain agreements. Do you remember something like that, Amy? We didn't make the certain agreements that we needed to be assured that this would be in our best interest. There was some language like that. I don't have it precise. Obviously they were going to need a hell of a lot. They were going to have to add, the U.S. government was going to have to get involved a good deal more to have the kind of operation I guess they wanted. But that point, Cora, about that coup is very interesting.
Yeah, we've got a number of people who are calling in. If you just want to make a statement, that's fine. Otherwise, if you've got a question, let's talk. The number again is 212-279-3400. Thanks so much for calling in. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. My concern is, I'm aware that you busy with many different aspects of this Panama situation presentation. I'm very concerned with the latest development as far as police apprehending the demonstrators after the demonstration. I wish you'd just keep an eye on that part. That's very important because there are citizens of this country that are opposed to this operation in Panama, but at the same time, with all other responsibilities, not interested in being locked up or rallied up there, and it's important that a lot of attention is paid to that, what is happening to them.
That's a good point.
That's what I'm concerned with.
Yeah, I just wanted to say the caller is referring to what happened after a demonstration that took place earlier this evening. There was an anti-invasion demonstration that took place at Rockefeller Center by the tree. Then a march followed, and when that march began to break up, we were told by an eyewitness, somebody was there, there was a massive police attack. There was a number of arrests. We heard that 30 cops jumped on this one black man, and we are greatly concerned about what happened there, and that this should not become a mini Panama in which they attempt to keep down dissent, not only by limiting the flow of information, but intimidating people who stand in opposition. Thank you very much for your call.
And you're listening to WBAI. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, there's some information. When the invasion was initiated, when it first took place, a helicopter gunship, I understand, attempted to destroy their radio station. What was the fate of the man, Mario, I forget his last name.
Ruggione. Apparently he survived that attack, but he was interviewed minutes before the U.S. helicopter blew away the remaining sort of broadcasting apparatus of Radio Nacional, Noriega supporters. But Mario Ruggione, the former minister of finance, did survive, I understand.
Right. I think the whole building had been evacuated just minutes before the bombing, so no one was injured in that. I also just wanted to reiterate one of the reports we read earlier about 2,000 Panamanians being rounded up by U.S. troops and being questioned about their politics. This is a very interesting point, not something that I've heard on any of the networks. And now when I watch the defense file footage and I see reporters saying PDF forces are being rounded up and I see a man who's not wearing a uniform being put into a truck, it's interesting, and I think, is this a PDF forces person that they're arresting, or are they arresting all the men, as this report says, in the area? And these are questions that you, as an informed listener, as an informed viewer, should be asking as you watch the mainstream coverage of Panama. We can't know for sure. These are questions, and this is a report that came out of Mexico City. The Echo
TV network, which is one of the largest Spanish stations, has Panamanian reporters, and this is what they have been seeing. 2,000 Panamanians rounded up and brought to Andrew's base, being asked questions about their politics. 212-279-3400. Hi, you're on the air. Hello, you're on WBAI.
Yes, I wish to express to you my sympathies for the Panamanian people and even for the poor Americans who are suffering. Look, I have tried for 2 years to try to reach the mentalities of Rosemary Reed and the station manager and everyone on the staff. And the same...
We're going to try to be taking a lot of calls, and since you've called in a lot today, we're going to try to take a couple of other calls. 212-279-3400, as Fred Hershkowitz, who's coming in right now, is pointing out, you've just got 2 minutes. It's not a lot of calls we're taking. So let's get some quick comments. Hi, you're on the air.
Me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm calling to let people know that they can make telephone calls and to send telexes to Guatemala if they want to try and help out in terms of the Peace Brigade International.
Mm-hmm.
Toll-free number they call, 1-800-752-3852, and they can send prepared messages to President Cerezo and or General Gramajo or make up their own message for $5.25 each, which they will be billed for.
Okay, thank you very much for calling. And that listener is referring, of course, to the report we just brought you earlier of the three Peace Brigade people, one of them American, two Canadians, who were slashed on Wednesday night, who were attacked when they were going back to the Peace Brigade House, which is an international witness organization. Things are not only tense right now in Panama, but, of course, in the rest of Central America, in El Salvador and Guatemala. Hello, you're on WBAI.
Hi.
Hi. We've got two women who've called in now. Usually it's men calling in on this Panama Day. It's nice to hear your voice.
I think women are very interested. What I wanted to say was there is a demonstration tomorrow at McGuire Air Force Base in New Jersey at 11 a.m. at the main gate. And
why at McGuire Air Force Base?
Well, because the information that... the Pledge for Peace organization, and I think CISPES, I'm not sure, got was that planes are leaving to go to Panama from McGuire with supplies for the military.
And do you have a phone number that people can be reached at if they want to join that demonstration?
Yes, the phone number is area code 609-275-6716.
Again?
Area code 609-275-6716.
Okay. All right.
I heard the woman from the demonstration come in during the program before, and it was really abominable, and I really believe we're on the verge of martial law. It's very scary.
Thanks very much for calling, and that's all the calls we can take tonight.
All right. We want to thank you all for listening. Thank the callers who tried to call and couldn't get through. I want to thank Amy Goodman, Robert Knight, Andrew Phillips, Murillo, Jessica Gigi, Boris, called very hard to bring you this day. I have been and hope I will continue to be Dennis Bernstein, and we will continue to bring you emergency coverage beginning again tomorrow morning at 8:30 on the U.S. invasion of Panama. Stay tuned.
And you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, New York. We want to thank WBAI for allowing us to retransmit their signal. And now we resume our normal programming, Rocking Iration, coming to you from the hour, special hour of 9, between 9 and 10 o'clock. And that will be followed by more music here on WUSB. But first, Stardate.
Stardate December 22nd. Our universe is made up of galaxies, huge collections of stars. There are billions of galaxies with lots of space in between. So the galaxies don't meet each other all that often. But galaxies do...